Chapter 63. Englishman, and that all kinds of calamities happened to his country, because it did things that England did not, and did not do things that England did. In this belief, to be sure, they had long been carefully trained by the barnacles and stiltstockings, who were always proclaiming to them, officially, that no country which failed to submit itself to those two large families could possibly hope to be under the protection of Providence, and who, when they believed it, disparaged them in private as the most prejudiced people under the sun. This, therefore, might be called a political position of the bleeding hearts, but they entertained other objections to having foreigners in the yard. They believed that foreigners were always badly off, and though they were as ill off themselves as they could desire to be, that did not diminish the force of the objection. They believed that foreigners were dragooned and bayoneted, and though they certainly got their own skulls promptly fractured, if they showed any ill humor, still it was with a blunt instrument, and that didn't count. They believed that foreigners were always immoral, and though they had an occasional assize at home, and now and then a divorce case or so, that had nothing to do with it. They believed that foreigners had no independent spirit, as never being escorted to the poll in droves by Lord Decimus Tite Barnacle, with colors flying, and the tune of Rule Britannia playing. Not to be tedious, they had many other beliefs of a similar kind. Against these obstacles, the lame foreigner with the stick had to make head as well as he could, not absolutely single-handed, because Mr. Arthur Clennam had recommended him to the Plornishes. He lived at the top of the same house, but still at heavy odds. However, the bleeding hearts were kind hearts, and when they saw the little fellow cheerily limping about with a good-humored face, doing no harm, drawing no knives, committing no outrageous immoralities, living chiefly on farinaceous and milk diet, and playing with Mrs. Plornish's children of an evening, they began to think that, although he could never hope to be an Englishman, still it would be hard to visit that affliction on his head. They began to accommodate themselves to his level, calling him Mr. Baptist, apostrophe but treating him like a baby, and laughing immoderately at his lively gestures and his childish English more, because he didn't mind it, and laughed too. They spoke to him in very loud voices, as if he were stone deaf. They constructed sentences, by way of teaching him the language in its purity, such as were addressed by the savages to Captain Cook, or by Friday to Robinson Crusoe. Mrs. Plornish was particularly ingenious in this art, and attained so much celebrity for saying Miopi leg well soon, apostrophe that it was considered in the yard, but a very short remove indeed from speaking Italian. Even Mrs. Plornish herself began to think that she had a natural call towards that language. As he became more popular, household objects were brought into requisition for his instruction in a copious vocabulary, and whenever he appeared in the yard, ladies would fly out at their doors crying Mr. Baptist teapot, apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Baptist dustpan, apostrophe apostrophe Mr. Baptist flour dredger, apostrophe Mr. Baptist coffee biggin, apostrophe apostrophe at the same time exhibiting those articles, and penetrating him with a sense of the appalling difficulties of the Anglo-Saxon tongue. It was in this stage of his progress, and in about the third week of his occupation, that Mr. Pank's fancy became attracted by the little man. Mounting to his attic, attended by Mrs. Plornish as interpreter, he found Mr. Baptist with no furniture, but his bed on the ground, a table, and a chair, carving with the aid of a few simple tools, in the blithest way possible. "Now, old chap," apostrophe said Mr. Panks, "pay up." Apostrophe, he had his money ready, folded in a scrap of paper, and laughingly handed it in. Then with a free action, threw out as many fingers of his right hand as there were shillings, and made a cut crosswise in the air for an odd sixpence. "Oh!" apostrophe apostrophe said Mr. Panks, watching him, wonderingly. "That's it, is it? You're a quick customer. It's all right. I didn't expect to receive it, though. apostrophe, Mrs. Plornish here interposed with great condescension, and explained to Mr. Baptist, E please, E glad get money, apostrophe, the little man smiled and nodded. His bright face seemed uncommonly attractive to Mr. Panks. How's he getting on in his limb? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked Mrs. Plornish. Oh, he's a deal better, sir, apostrophe, said Mrs. Plornish. We expect next week he'll be able to leave off his stick entirely. Apostrophe, the opportunity being too favorable to be lost, Mrs. Plornish displayed her great accomplishment by explaining with pardonable pride to Mr. Baptist, he'll be leg well soon. Apostrophe, he's a merry fellow too, apostrophe, said Mr. Panks, admiring him as if he were a mechanical toy. How does he live? Apostrophe, why, sir, apostrophe, rejoined Mrs. Plornish, he turns out to have quite a power of carving them flowers that you see him at now. Apostrophe, Mr. Baptist, watching their faces as they spoke, held up his work. Mrs. Plornish interpreted in her Italian manner, on behalf of Mr. Panks, E please. Double good. Apostrophe, can he live by that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Mr. Panks. He can live on very little, sir, and it is expected as he will be able, in time, to make a very good living. Mr. Clennam got it him to do, and gives him odd jobs besides in at the works next door makes them for him, in short, when he knows he wants them. Apostrophe, and what does he do with himself now, when he ain't hard at it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Panks. Why, not much as yet, sir, on accounts I suppose of not being able to walk much. But he goes about the yard, and he chats without particular understanding or being understood, and he plays with the children, and he sits in the sun, he'll sit down anywhere, as if it was an armchair, and he'll sing, and he'll laugh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, laugh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, echoed Mr. Panks. He looks to me, as if every tooth in his head was always laughing. Apostrophe, but whenever he gets to the top of the steps at t'other end of the yard, apostrophe, said Mrs. Plornish, he'll peep out in the curiousest way. So that some of us thinks he's peeping out towards where his own country is, and some of us thinks he's looking for somebody he don't want to see, and some of us don't know what to think. Apostrophe, Mr. Baptist seemed to have a general understanding of what she said, or perhaps his quickness caught and applied her slight action of peeping. In any case, he closed his eyes, and tossed his head with the air of a man who had sufficient reasons for what he did, and said in his own tongue, it didn't matter. Altro. What's altro? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Panks. Hem. It's a sort of a general kind of expression, sir, apostrophe, said Mrs. Plornish. Is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Panks. Why, then altro to you, old chap. Good afternoon. Altro. Apostrophe, Mr. Baptist in his vivacious way repeating the word several times, Mr. Panks in his duller way gave it him back once. From that time it became a frequent custom with Panks the gypsy, as he went home jaded at night, to pass round by Bleeding Heart Yard, go quietly up the stairs, look in at Mr. Baptist's door, and, finding him in his room, to say, Hello, old chap. Altro. Apostrophe, to which Mr. Baptist would reply with innumerable bright nods and smiles, Altro, Signor, Altro, Altro, Altro. Apostrophe, apostrophe, after this highly condensed conversation, Mr. Panks would go his way with an appearance of being lightened and refreshed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.